Accession number 19851, Reel 4.
Annie Kerr, Reel 4. If you can just repeat it, please.
Yes, Lord Brabourne, he was in Ireland on the boat with Lord Louis Mountbatten when he was blown up by the IRA, and I think one of his sons was killed, the younger one, and an Irish lad, young boy, were killed, and Lord Brabourne, he never looked back, you know what I mean, never looked up after that. That was the beginning of the end for him. But he was in Normandy for one period, my platoon commander, Lieutenant Knatchbull.
So you were just describing that incident you remembered where you had the lucky escape not having to attack the ridge.
Yeah.
What else do you remember at this time?
Well, and then we went on to capture quite a few villages, but each time we were losing maybe a dozen men and killed and maybe 20 wounded. Well, it ain't long before your battalion's gone. And eventually we came out there from that episode, and we went back to Bayer to prepare for the big offensive, the Operation Goodwood, to really break out of the perimeter. And as say, we set off after the 1,000 bomber raid, and we went to a place, we captured a place called St. Martin des Bezés, and from there, we went on Operation Goodwood first, and we got as far as a place called Cagney, and that was as far as the advance went. We had the 11th Armoured Division on our right, and the 7th Armoured Division on our left, the 3 Armoured Division all attacked. And eventually we got to a place called Cagney.
What was it like on that advance to Cagney?
Well, we didn't have a real hard do, but we did have to clear on bits of resistance. But when we got to Cagney, the tanks come up against a massive wall of German anti-tank guns and tanks, and they could not make any headway at all. No way. So we had to dig in at Cagney, but that's where I lost my best pal. We always dug in the trench together. He came from Hull, and we always dug in the trench together, the two of us. Anyway, when we captured this Cagney position, we're under fire all the time, when we captured it, and when we got where the Germans had gone, we found there were two holes in the ground where the Germans had been in them, what they'd cleared out of. But the thing was, the Germans, they just used to have a single hole for one man, where we dug a two-man hole. So when we got to these positions, we thought we was in luck. We found two holes ready made, and I went in the left-hand side one, and he went in the right-hand side one. But we was under fire all the time, so the lads who didn't find the hole ready made, they were having to dig in under fire. Anyway, the tanks were there, and behind us, just behind us. They'd been stopped, couldn't get any further. There was getting knocked out left, right and centre. And there were the German anti-tank guns were firing these solid shot armour piercing shells at the tanks. And my mate, Ginger Fletcher from Hull, he was in that hole. We both just as we got to him, we got in him. Me on the left, him on the right, the two hole. And a shot was fired at a tank about 10 yards behind us. And this armour-piercing shell, it hit the trench top of Ginger's trench, what he was in, and went under the ground for about a couple of foot, on the parapet of the trench, a couple of foot so, and into his trench. And of course, when the armour-piercing shells hit a tank or anything, they'd spin round inside it, kill everybody inside it. But he was in a trench. Unfortunately, it was gravel ground, and the shell created shrapnel, although it was a solid shot, and the shrapnel was the gravel, and it killed him outright.
What was his name?
Guardsman Fletcher. And I found out something afterwards that I never knew. Guardsman Fletcher. And I found out something about him I never knew, and I always regretted that I never knew. He never told me how old he was. And I thought that he would be about 27 or 28. And in actual fact, when I saw his gravestone after the war, his photo of his grave after the war, I found out he was 38 years of age. And his brother, elder brother, had been killed in the Coldstream Guards in the First World War. And I never knew he was 38. And I'd been with him a couple of years. He never ever told me his age. Now, I thought it was wrong that they allowed a man of 38 to be an infantry battalion of that calibre, where they were all young men. And he was 38 years of age when he got killed. And I felt a bit bitter about that, because I don't think he should have been there.
Whereabouts in Hull did he come from?
He come from Hazel Road. And the funny thing about it was, he told me the night before we attacked Cagney that he would get killed. He told me that. And I said to him, don't talk daft. He said, here, he said, there's my sister's address, he said. If you get her home, go and see her. I said, no, I don't want it. He made me have it, and I put it in my wallet. And he made me have this address of his sister, because he was convinced that he was going to be killed the next day. And he was killed. But I had this bit of paper. I had this bit of paper in my pocket for 3 or 4 years after the war, because the reason I didn't go and see his sister was, by the time I'd been in hospital a year, and getting out of hospital took me a year, the war was over, I didn't want to go to her and bring it all up once they'd got over it. I thought, I'll leave it at that, because I couldn't have described his injuries to him if I'd have gone. No way would I have described his injuries. And I never ever went to see him, but I never regretted it, because I thought it would be bringing up something that had gone over by then. But eventually I had this bit of paper, and I thought, well, I'm not carrying that no longer, because I ain't going to go, and I threw it away. And 4 or 5 years ago, a man rung me up, and he said, oh, he said, I've been in touch with your branch, and they've told me that you was in the 5th Battalion. I said, yeah. He said, did you know my uncle? I said, uncle? What to call him? He said, Fletcher. Well, I knew. Then he wanted to know all the details, but I never ever told him what his injuries was, because it would have upset him if I'd have told him. that I was really concerned when I found out that at 38 years of age they'd allowed him to be in a battalion with young lads. And most of them, the only people you got at that age was senior NCOs, warrant officers and people. Not riflemen. And I thought it was wrong, he should never have been there. He could have given him a job without that. But evidently he'd never complained. But at 38, he was old for a frontline infantryman. I mean, by then we had kids 18, 19, 20, 21. I'd been in the army since 1938 and I was only 23. So, 38 years of age. And how he kept up, I don't know. He still kept up with everybody else. Never flagged.
Can you take me on from Cagney now, please?
Yes, well, while we was at Cagney, we just sat there being shelled, and people shelled them, and they shelled us and motorbombed us, and that's all we did. And then, while we was at Cagney, there was 2 days of torrential rain. And when I say torrential rain, I mean like a monsoon for 2 days. So we ended up, the trenches full of water. The trenches were full of water. And everybody got temperatures because it had been boiling hot during the day and then all this for days and then all this rain came. And we'd been praying for water because we was all running out of water in the trenches. And they said that they were arranged for a water cart to pick water up in the village of Frenerville village, which is the next village. And I went with our section's water bottles, tied on a lanyard, all the water bottles. I went down to Frenerville, and while I was at this water cart at Frenerville, the rain started. And from coming from there back to the company's position and to my section with the water bottles, our company, we was absolutely soaked to the skin before we got back. And it rained like that for 2 days and everything was a quagmire. But the worst thing it did, it made everybody ill. Everybody had temperatures, was feeling ill. And there was all complaining. And the MO said, if anybody's thinking of going sick, they can forget it because they'll have to take half the battalion or more out. So nobody could report sick, although there was feeling temperatures with this sudden days of heat and then this sudden soaking with rain. And then eventually, after being there, and we lost a few men to shell fire, but eventually was going to come out of there at Cagney, but we ended up on the night time. They said, oh, we're not going out, we're going to attack the next village. The Irish Guards have attacked it yesterday and they've been repulsed and they've had to leave a lot of the wounded behind at Frenerville, which is the next village. So we went out on the night time at dark and went and got in this wood, the battalion, in this wood behind Frenerville, ready to attack it. And we did attack Frenerville the next day. Frenerville. We did attack it the next day and we captured it. But the rain was still there and it poured and lashed down. And when we come to leave that position 2 or 3 nights later to go out back to the rest area, the mud was well up the calves, up calf deep. And the trucks could hardly move. because there'd been tanks and trucks up and down this road, and you couldn't tell where even the road had been. All it was a 200 yard wide stretch of mud stretching all the way back, and we went out in that. And of course, as we was going out, another pal of mine from Hull, he was going out, and while they were going out, a shell landed as they was leaving the positions to go out. A shell landed, and I think there was five or six of them in his section, and he was the only one that survived.
What was his name?
Merrills. John Merrills. He died last year. No, not last year. Well, early on in this year, like. And as I say, the quarters out in the open, going out, leaving the trenches, handing over to the 15th Scottish Division. But this 15th Scottish Division, as we passed through them going out, they were calling us all the names under the sun, saying we hadn't left them any trenches to get in. But I was in the company headquarters the day before when their CO came up to look at the positions, and while he was looking at the positions, there was a load of machine gun fire come through the edge and nearly killed him. Just missed him. And he turned on and said, "I ain't taking these positions over, they're too exposed." So, consequently, his own men, when they came in, they didn't take our positions, they had to dig fresh. And they were blaming us during the night for not leaving them some trenches to get in. And, of course, the Ginger Merrills, he got wounded, and he laid there all night, and these Scottish troops found him the next morning at daylight. And he was evacuated. Then after that, when we went up towards Falaise, when we went up towards Cormons, we eventually came to a place called Marvin Deer, and we got stopped at Marvin Deer. We'd been riding on the backs of the tanks up to then, thinking we was well in open country, but then we run into them at Le Marvin Deer, and we couldn't make no headway there, because the countryside out there for infantry or tanks is absolutely abominable. It's close bocage country where your visibility is down to about at the most anywhere 15-20 yards. If you've ever been to the bushes on Beverley Westwood, you've an idea what it's like. That's what it's like everywhere. And sunken roads, that's all the way. Sunken roads and bocage country. And you couldn't see, everywhere you went, you were going blind. Tanks, everything. You could have gone 20 yards and from seemingly nothing there, suddenly be met by a barrage of anti-tank fire or machine gun fire, because the visibility wasn't there to be had. The countryside, the bushes, it was terrible. Everywhere you went, you was edging your way. You couldn't get up and go forward. You had to take everything step by step with a bocage. Terrible country for infantry and tanks. But while we were there, we got so far, and then we was riding on the back of our tank, and the next thing was a machine gun opened up and killed one of the lads on the top of the tank, shot him in the stomach, and of course we all jumped off the tank. The tank, he went forward. Unfortunately, he went the wrong way, and he'd only gone about 30 yards, and he was blasted knocked out with anti-tank gun. But when we jumped off, the person who'd fired the machine gun, he'd only been 5 yards away with this machine gun, and what he'd done, he'd fired it at us, and then he'd run, left the gun and run, but he run the wrong way. You understand what I mean? He run into our men instead of running away from them. And of course, he was killed. That German was killed. But the funny part about it was, on top of his machine gun, he had some British tank rations. What he'd obviously got out of a tank that had been knocked out of ours, and he had some little tins of cheese, because the tank's got enough rations for 5 men in a box. And he had this box opened, and he was just going to have his meal out of this box when we must have surprised him, because when we saw it, one of the wits on the ground, like, he said, oh, he said, look at him, he said, the cheeky bugger, he was just going to eat some of our grub and all. He said, but he won't eat no more. Eating our rations, he said. But and when I saw this German that was killed, he'd be no more than 17. And he'd been left there on his own with a machine gun. And he'd be no more than 17. And then we were stuck there, dug in there. Well, dug in of a can. And that's where I got wounded. I got wounded there because we was laid out in the open there, and we were getting mortar bombs and we were getting shell fire. And I said to our platoon sergeants and the platoon officer, I said, I'm sure them shells that are coming, I said, I think they're 20 pounder shells, 25 pounder shells from our guns, and the mortar bombs are coming from the Germans. So the platoon sergeant studied a bit. He said, it's funny, I thought them shells sounded more like ours than theirs. So I said to him, I said, do you want me to go back to company headquarters and see the company commander and tell him we think that our own guns are shelling us? Well, I said, it won't do no harm, will it? So, you know the old saying, never volunteer for anything in the army. I volunteered to go, and the shells were dropping, and the mortar bombs. Anyway, I knew I'd get through that. Anyhow, I got to the company headquarters, and when I got there, Captain Gibb, he was sat propped up against the tree with a lump of shrapnel had gone through his neck. So he was still in command, sat propped up against this tree. So I said to him, oh, the company signed me, he said, what do you want? What's the matter? I said, oh, come to tell you, we think that them shells that are coming over are from our 25 pounders. And whether he believed it or not, I don't know. He said, oh, we know all about it, get back to your company and your company position and tell Sergeant Connell that it's all in hand. But whether it was our shells or not, I don't know to this day, but everybody seemed to think it was, but we could be wrong. And anyway, I got back there and I told him what had happened, and I just laid down, because with no trench, I laid down in what was supposed to be a ditch bottom, but it was only shallow, a very shallow thing, and I laid down in it, and I laid alongside a lad I knew called Martin, who was in our section, and all the rest of the section was strung along, and I just got laid down in the bottom of this holler, for what it was, and the next thing was, there was this terrific explosion. It seemed as though it was on top of me, and it was a shell. And the next thing all I knew was I had a terrific pain across the bottom of my pelvis and my back, as though I described it as a lumberjack with his axe just instead of hitting the tree, fell in a tree, he was hitting me across the back with it. That was how bad it was. And of course, I couldn't help but gasping, screaming, pain, like, the pain was terrific. And then, as I sort of come around, like, and realised what had happened, and the sergeant come, he got his knife out and he's cut my trousers off me, and I said to him, I can't feel my legs. I said, I don't feel as though I've got any legs. And he said to me, give us your hand, there's your legs, look, your legs are there. So I said, it's funny, I can't feel them. He said, well, they're there. But he said, I'll tell you what, it's a nasty wound. He said, it's a bad one. He said, it is a bad wound, he said. But, he said, we'll get you back. And anyhow, the wireless back to bring for stretchers, and two Irish guards come with a jeep with two stretchers across the top of the jeep. But Marty next to me, he was laid there and not making a sound. But there was no blood on him. No blood on him. Not making a sound. And there was two or three more badly wounded along the edge bottom. But what happened to them, I don't know. But Martin, they put him on the jeep with me. And as we were going along, I said to these two Irish guards that was driving us back to the regimental aid post, I said, there's Martin here, look, I said, he doesn't look good. I said, it looks to me as though he's died. They stopped the jeep, they dropped the jeep, looked at him, and felt of his pulse and what have you. They said he's dead, and they just took him off and laid him at the side of the grass verge, on the grass verge. So they took me back to the regimental aid post. Anyway, I got to the regimental aid post. But the thing that struck me about when I got wounded was, when I was laid on my stomach, and the blood, it was spreading underneath my stomach. And it gradually, I could see the blood gradually spreading into a big circle underneath me. And it was absolutely red hot. It seemed as though it was red hot, the blood. As though it was boiling. I thought, well, God, that blood's hot. But I'd lost a lot of blood. But anyhow, I got back to the regimental aid post, but when I got back there, the regimental aid post was swamped with wounded. They couldn't cope with them. There was a wounded laid in trenches outside. And instead of in the cellar of this farmhouse, they were laid outside in trenches. Even the RSM was laid in a trench. And anyhow, I was in there, and gradually, I know I was delirious, I know that. And anyway, they give me some morphine, and I don't remember anything then till I woke up, and there was putting me on a lorry. And I did hear the MO talking. I heard him say to the Sergeant Faulkner, the MI room sergeant, we'll have to get these people out here, he said, somehow or other. He said, otherwise we're going to lose a lot of them. So they started putting us on some lorries that had come up with ammunition. Two stretchers into each lorry. And, of course, nobody thought anything about it. Away we goes.